The following takes place between midnight and 1 a.m. on the day of the California presidential primary. Events occur in real time.
Hi, I'm Steve Hopkins, the director and one of the many executive producer types.
And I'm Peter Levy, director of photography.
Ah, start off with some lovely stock footage of Kuala Lumpur. And, yeah, we didn't actually shoot too much of this in Canoga Park, I think. But it was fun to sort of start off the series with some sort of international intrigue. We did shoot this in Canoga Park, though, on the back lot. In the car park, I think, at night time.
Yeah. The tropical LA Valley.
That's right. It was actually quite chilly that night, I think. This, you can see probably breath coming out of people's mouths in the hot, tropical Indonesian capital of Kuala Lumpur. I think this bit was added later, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't recall shooting this
bit. No, I think we tested it, and the opening was not quite conclusive enough, and so I think when we went back to series, we just shot this one sequence.
Oh, whoever shot it did a nice job.
Mr. Charters, of course.
Identify.
Victor Rovner, requesting permission.
You want to talk about the split screen idea?
Yeah, I guess so. The split screens are something, you know, I'd written that script with Peter Arliff, you know, about on split screens, and when this came along, I thought this is a really great opportunity to try out something that would actually work in this real-time concept, you know, in the high-tech computer world. People are so used to seeing split screens on their computers.
You've talked about doing split screens for years.
Yeah, because they sort of, you can tell a story, tell people where to look, and tell people where they are and what they're feeling at the same time.
Excuse me a moment. Let me catch up.
Mrs. Walsh?
Sir, we just heard from Rovner. He confirmed that there will be an attempt today.
Could you find out who the target is?
Senator David Palmer.
As soon as the polls open, we're going to be.
This sequence used to be at the end. This was the final sequence in the original pilot.
That's
where you
right.
Revealed right at the end that it was about the president. And then when we tested it, I think the whole show was so new and complicated that we ended up putting this at the front. And we shot this in about 5 minutes.
That's right.
Opposite the St. James Hotel, it was in the Argyle now, I think.
That's right. It was an incredibly windy night. We couldn't get the equipment up.
Everything's looped. Right on Sunset Boulevard.
On this historic day?
Deal.
There's Penny.
And
became the arch-villainess of the series. And Dennis is someone I saw in the movie Love Field and really fought for the series. And he turned out great, I think. This is how the original series started, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And then it sort of builds up from this quiet night at home.
Is she still giving you the cold?
But needs to start off with more of a bang, I think. It's always hard to start off any piece of drama where it's clear that the husband and wife are fighting or breaking up or getting back together. Or
it's always one of those, isn't it?
Yeah. So time for bed. And of course, by, you know, in most dramatic standards, that means they'd get back together at the end. But this is 24. We don't do that kind of nonsense. Amazing. Alicia was 19 there, but she seems so young.
Yeah, who would have thought she'd turn out to almost like a TV superstar?
Yeah. We actually had another actress for that role who was only 15, but she seemed so grown up compared to Alicia, who was able to act much younger. She pulled it off.
She's still giving you a hard time?
I mean, we shot in this house and there's nowhere to put lights. I think it's just screwing things into the ceiling and
getting into trouble.
Yeah. I would have liked to do a nicer cosmetic job lighting Leslie on this, but given the restrictions of the location and the shooting time, we just couldn't do that.
But, I mean, from the beginning, we kind of abandoned the concept of everyone looking pretty in the show anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, it looks surprisingly grain-free as I'm watching it right now. I thought we kind of made it grubbier than this.
Well, I mean, you know, the big thing was to make it feel authentic. Mm-hmm. And if people look too good, then it feels lit, it feels a bit false.
Off each other, and then if she's insulting you, she's insulting me too.
Yeah, we're trying to make it follow that more British kitchen sink style, even though it actually looks pretty glamorous to me right now.
The key word is authentic. Make it look authentic.
And there's quite a few crazy ideas in this, so if you can make them feel real. I mean, Leslie, we were shooting in the CTU the first day. We started shooting day one. I had to go to Fox with Leslie and Sarah, who hadn't been cast yet. Go to Fox. Fox agreed to cast them, came back to the shoot, and carried on shooting in their real clothes.
Oh, that's right. I remember. Yes.
And so Sarah ended up wearing, for the whole season, what she wore in the first episode, because that's what she happened to be wearing to the casting.
Turned up to for the audition.
Mm. And being a dad of a girl the same age as this was, when this was made, I was used to this. Alicia running away, or the daughter running away, and being naughty.
I think we've all been either the one who ran away or the one who discovered the runaway, haven't we?
Yeah. Trying to do this some without doing close-ups of things as such. You know, even though there's lots of attention to detail on this and things that you have to read and computer screens you have to see, we try to let the cameras sort of land on places. You know, with two cameras, two cameras shooting one direction, both with zooms on, and they would try and zoom in and capture pieces as it went, and then the reverse. And never really trying to stop and doing a close-up as such of a book or this and that, which, you know, A, we didn't have time for, so we tried to incorporate it into the shooting style.
It's strange looking at it. When you see a static shot like that previous shot of Leslie, how it almost feels false when the camera's still.
Yeah. Grubby teenagers in the valley in Los Angeles. Good stuff.
Jack Bauer. Are you planning on seeing Kimberly tonight?
Nah, man, we broke up. You know that.
Yeah, I just want to make sure you know that.
I mean, sometimes the split screens, you know, they can get, if they're too crazy, they don't work. I mean, they tried all sorts of stuff, the editors, after I introduced the idea of overlapping the screens and this and that, and I hated it. If it started feeling like video, you know.
Yes.
And to try and keep as clean as possible and use them for the right reasons. One, you know, usually there was a wide shot to show the environment and then a close-up just so you could see who was chatting and talking. Very few shots like that.
Yes.
Craning off clocks.
Yes.
And we remember in the first episode, actually, I just remember now, we tried to shoot clocks all the way through. The camera would always start or end up in clocks and we ended up throwing them all out.
That's right, because we thought we had to give that time reference. Yeah. But, you know, once it picks up its own momentum, you realize that it is in apparent real time.
Yeah.
You don't need to reconfirm that.
That's right. Jackie's an Australian actress. It's pretty interesting. And all our car stuff, we always try to shoot like with 70s car mounts. You know, especially in the pilot where we shot stuff for real, and the series we went more green screen.
Yeah.
On the pilot, just attaching lenses to the cars, which feels sort of old-fashioned and fake, but at the same time, they're kind of honest, I think.
Well, you just get that interrelation between, you know, the background, the ambient lighting, and those random things going by.
Right.
From a lighting point of view, it's just a matter of bringing your light levels so far down that the ambient light, the store lights, the street lights look brighter.
Why are we interrupting your social life?
Right.
At least I have one.
And there's Sarah in her clothes she was wearing for.
Call the bureau, too.
Carlos, I think, was the only person who was cast before I came on, I think.
Yeah. There was one.
Everyone else was, all the other. Joel had worked with him before, I think, and already cast him in that role.
It's one of my favourite shots.
All right, this is the record company off Barrington, which was next to a big satellite TV place.
Yeah, wasn't it? Fox Sports World, that was all their satellites.
Oh, my God, I wish I'd known that. I could have watched all the soccer I wanted to in the world. But this was a record company lobby, which we just did a lot of stuff to. Carlos Bozo fixed it all up, and we just tried to shoot it.
And then we tried to do something with video screens, and it didn't quite come off there.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah.
It lost its sort of energy in the immediacy by going to the screen.
Who's here?
And we do handheld on a dolly on the floor here, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, good. Tony, I need detailed background on everyone on David Palmer's staff now.
Why? So a very un-TV ugly lighting, which is great.
Yep, it's a matter of mother, it's a necessity being the mother of invention. Mm. We had this large area, I think we can only use at night. We needed the ability to shoot 360 degrees at any time. So just adopted a lighting style. It was kind of sketchy, you know, bright lights coming down from the top and letting the mid-grounds go and just trying to get a bit of light on the close-ups. But
at the same time, you've got all the screens in the background too.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, we actually did these helicopter shots. And they didn't. There was something wrong with the lens. I shot for hours one night and just with available light, and then in the end I wasn't able to use a lot of it. This is those bad girls going out to... I think it was originally going to be a huge rave.
Yeah, that's...
And then I think money came involved and it became a furniture store a heartbeat.
That's right. The original scene was going to take place on Santa Monica Pier at night.
That's right. And then I think Griffith Park Observatory. Yeah. But then originally, actually, before you read it, it was a big party, a big rave, I think.
Right. Yeah, so I remember I had this wonderful lighting scheme in my head, how I was going to light Santa Monica Pier and the lights coming to the slats down to them on the beach underneath. And we wound up on the roof of a furniture ware shop, a warehouse in Van Nuys.
And inside it too, which is nice.
As a matter of fact, me too.
And the things, I think the scene works better for it.
In the opening scene in her bedroom, I found a particularly silly-looking toy, which was made out of, looks like a Dachshund.
Mr. Floppy.
Mr. Floppy was a crocheted toy.
That's right.
And he appears in every scene in the pilot and then most of the scenes in the whole first series, actually. Just then I noticed his shadow was up on a wall on the skyscraper as she walked in, and he'll be all over here. Now, this set didn't have to be dressed at all. This is the real thing. We just rearranged some of them more artistic furniture.
No set dresser would be bold enough to dress a set like that.
Well, I think it worked really well, actually, this furniture thing in the end, better than the conventional, all the other stuff. There's something surprisingly cool about it.
Less than 7 hours here in California.
Detective Costello, please.
Palmer is expected to clinch the presidential nomination.
There's lots of different experiments about how we use the timing of the clock and stuff, and eventually it would come in just to sort of move the plot along, or just to remind you where you were in time.
We use a lot longer lenses here than we normally do, but it works just for a number of reasons. It keeps the energy going. It makes the background sort of non-specific, so you can get away with murder in that way. I think once you establish a sense of geography, that's it. You don't need to see it again.
Right. Well, lots of dialogue scenes like this too. People around a table, which are always hard to shoot because you've got eyeline problems everywhere. And then this room looked great, but as we started shooting, it had all these metal grills on the wall. It was virtually impossible to record the sound in there. So we had to muck around for a long time.
Palmer. Cross it with terrorist databases. Start now.
Okay, we're on it. Let's go.
And lots of actors having to learn pages and pages of jargon.
Over that meaningless dialogue.
Gee whiz.
How you doing?
I can't complain.
Can or won't? Things better at home?
You know, one of my blocking things used to drive the actors crazy. I used to get moving around all over the place all the time. They're always doing stuff because you couldn't really, in a real-time sequence, because there's no cheating. So I'd make sure whatever they wanted to be, it was hard to get to.
Right, so... So they have to move around, the angles in the room change.
Yeah. And of course, if you've got two cameras aimed one way, it'll turn from one actor's close-up into the other one.
I am the last person on the face of this planet that you want to bring something like this to.
I don't agree.
Richard, I built a case against three of our own agents and busted them for taking bribes. If there's a conspiracy in the agency to kill David Palmer, I'll never get anywhere near it.
Well, you'll have to, Jack.
This scene seems really familiar now because I did so many of these like this in the first series, and then somehow Kiefer always keeps it fresh. We try wacky shots like that occasionally.
It's hard not to resist the tilt up and the reflection on the desk to the actual person.
God, yes.
That's never been done before.
I'll look into it. I'll do the best I can.
Good. Good. George Mason is coming over from division to give you a more detailed briefing on Palmer.
You think I should trust George Mason?
Not until we get a better handle on things. Don't trust anybody. Not even your own people.
Yeah, Sean's music is pretty good here.
We gotta find the shooter, Jack. Whatever it takes.
All right, we had that chewed that plane, didn't we, in the last day?
That's right. Yeah, this whole scene in it was one afternoon.
12:20, just over an hour.
Thank you.
In a really tiny part of a set. It's a very clever idea. They're setting this guy up to be the baddie, and then having the clock at the first break. After this, I think we usually ended the first break and coming out of the breaks in split screens like this.
Okay. Yep.
Just to remind everyone.
A bit of like a recap.
And the sound of that clock would always bring you back in, too, I think.
I'm very well, Patty. I'm landing in 1 hour. Are we still on for breakfast?
Meet Secret Service in the lobby.
He doesn't seem like a baddie, does he?
Not at all, with a European accent and wearing black.
Oh, God. Must be an assassin. There's Mia Kirshner next to him.
Excuse me. So, you know David Palmer?
Not yet. I am meeting him tomorrow.
We've been sitting here this whole time making small talk, and you never even mentioned it.
She is an interesting choice for this, because, of course, she turns out to be the baddie, very clearly. But at the same time, it doesn't come across, doesn't seem like the type of person you'd have in that role.
Yeah, I must say I was surprised on the casting, but she turned out being fantastic, and it.
She came back a big series favourite. I think she's been back almost every year now to do a few episodes here and there.
Like a People's Choice assassin.
Yes. People's Choice because she's a sexy lesbian assassin choice.
Why?
He didn't say.
I love this shot. I love this idea. We use it a few times. You know, when people talk to each other, they don't always look at each other. And you can get the face of the person talking and seeing the other person's reaction at the same time.
Yeah, and you don't need to be, everyone has to be in focus.
Did you hear anything?
No.
It's hard to look back now and see how this pace could have worked without the split screens in retrospect. Just because you've got no gimmicks, you know, you can't do the MTV-style cutting you do in all action stuff now.
Gave her own password to show that we trusted her, remember?
Yes, it's actually a really interesting discipline. You know, the only thing you could change with cutting is geography, not time.
I can't be there with you right now.
If I was doing a phone sequence, I usually shoot a wide shot, a close-up, then I'd shoot one from way behind, knowing that we'd be able to change all the dialogue later. When you're editing this together, you want to move dialogue around. You shoot one through all the mixture of the room.
San Diego State, I figure, what the hell? Give college a try.
Remember then we found that the split screens work much better with close-ups. Initially, we didn't frame that way, but it became quite apparent that it, with three images on the screen, each image needs to be fairly simple and bold.
And when we shot this, there was actually a reason our sexuality downstairs going on and marijuana smoking. But then even though I said to everyone at the start, it's okay to have the sex, it's okay to have them smoking pot, and absolutely no problem when it came to it, I had to cut most of it out. So I had to cut around this dialogue sequence not to have the joint near the mouth, which was a little aggravating. And then there was a sort of more sex downstairs, which we had to cut out as well, even though it was hardly raunchy, even though, you know, the show was so violent and stuff, I was surprised we weren't allowed to go a bit further. But yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff in the show. It's not like it was too dull. But you look at the scene, you see the joint in their hands or something in their hands, and you never see it again. And then I had made sure that Jack had a magic cabinet in his locker. Because I knew at some point if the series ever got picked up, all sorts of things were going to have to come out of there. Clothes, weaponry, a car.
Possibly Superman.
Yes. How's it going? Good to see you.
This is actually quite an interesting set because it's basically a glass box above the other room, the CTU. I thought it was going to be hell to light, and I really had no idea how to do it until we started. And then it just fell into place quite easily. Because of that green tint on the glass, I just met with like little glows here and there, and it just seemed to fall into place really well.
And we stopped worrying about reflections, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was terrible for sound, too. It was all glass.
Yeah, that's right.
All different angles.
Yep.
And sound bounced around. Xander's a great actor, Xander Berkeley. He actually ended up getting married to Sarah Scott and during the first series.
You know he's no friend of the agency, right? If he gets elected, this place gets gutted.
And this office was real, too, wasn't it? It wasn't built.
That's right. That's right. We couldn't move
anything.
A record
executive's office above, looking down on everyone in the room.
I remember asking if we could take one of the panes of glass out, and they said weigh 800 pounds each, and it takes a team of five men to move it. So we just, I think, put most of the lights on the floor.
When it came to series, we rebuilt this, didn't we, on the stage, and then we could take the walls off with great effort.
I'm going to call Walsh and tell him that I did everything I could. I would like to cover my own ass.
Jack, you're
fine. This is one of the more challenging parts of the script. I had to try and work out how this guy walks through the office, picks up a tranquilizer gun, and comes back to shoot someone. But I was going, okay, that's a challenge to make that feel remotely authentic.
And I remember the tranquilizer gun's about as big as a 44 Magnum.
Mm. There was this great music that was in The Insider by that great South American composer.
At the sound of the tones, the time will be 12:29 and 30 seconds.
This is a great sequence to pull off this. I was pleased with how this worked.
At the sound of the tones.
To do a whole sequence where in real time where there's actually no dialogue and trying to keep people involved in the tranquilizer gun cabinet.
What are you doing?
He's screwing with us. Get me that binder.
What?
The binder. Get me the binder.
The sound of the
complicated blocking this to try and get all this working so everyone's seeing stuff at the same time and without cheating too much.
Yeah, this thing works really well.
Because you don't know, that's not a real gun. Right now, you think it's going upstairs to.
Yep.
Whack him.
It's got that Hitchcockian thing where the audience is fearing one thing already.
Yeah. The old tranquilizing someone in the glass office without anyone seeing problem.
You are out of your mind.
Mason's holding something back. I need some bargaining power.
How are you going to get it?
Remember Philippe.
But see, if this room had solid walls, it would just be a boring scene that would look terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's backlit too, isn't it?
When they rolled up Darcy's assets, $200,000 was missing. I always thought it fell into Mason's pockets. Now I need proof.
You're gonna blackmail a district director?
I want you to check Darcy's accounts. You can access them through the secured files. Use this. Nina, he's going to wake up in half.
I'm so computer literate, I had to really go on faith a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it all makes sense, but it sounds like it does. Of course, you got to try and keep all that stuff alive, too.
Senator Palmer's lending intelligence, political courage, hard work, and luck.
Hello?
I remember under so much pressure, time-wise, that they were begging me not to break the coffee cup because they wouldn't have time to shoot it. That's it. I thought we could manage it.
Do you have a son or a
daughter, Kimberly.
Didn't we try and shoot it in slow motion and then realise that you can't do that?
Can't do slow motion.
No, you can't, yeah, we're in real time.
None.
It's a very interesting discipline, sort of taking away a lot of traditional filmmaking tools like that, and like being able to cut to shift time. Basically, you'd cut the boring bits out.
Got Darcy's account number.
Good.
It's encrypted, I can't get around it.
Ask Tony to do it.
Fun thing about the split screens, too, look at that last episode, you could do interesting framing. You know, we would shoot super wide with someone as a small part of the screen, knowing we'd crop it later on and do not that, you know, it was known at the time of shooting the part, but in my head I thought we could shoot these big wide shots with someone at the bottom of the screen and you'd be able to use whichever part of it you wanted to in the screens.
Tony, I need you to do something for me.
For you or for Jack?
I need you to get into this account.
Tony's a bit jealous of Jack.
What does Philippe Darcet's bank account have to do with David Palmer?
We don't know yet. I'm trying to pick up a thread.
It's interesting, because I've been trying to pick up a thread of my own.
But what?
Whether you're still sleeping with Jack?
It's
much fun to have soap opera fun stuff, isn't it?
You've seen him. He turned in his own people, for Christ's sake.
They were, yes, I think assassinating a presidential candidate is not as interesting as office sex.
Look, we don't have a lot of time. Will you help me out here? Please.
See what I can find.
It's great when you look back on Sarah's involvement in the whole series. At the end, we kind of very carefully tracked to make sure that everything she did wasn't a complete betrayal of her final position. And we spent one day just going through everything just to make sure that there's nothing blatantly, obviously, horribly cheating about it.
Get all the internet passwords connected to it.
Sure, if you have a warrant.
And if I didn't have a warrant?
It's important.
It's pretty important.
If we don't have a warrant, we're still going to wiretap someone anyway. And find out all about their private stuff without their permission.
It happens all the time.
Mm. Yeah, because this was April 2000 we shot this. April 2001.
Yeah, that should be right.
April 2001.
Hello?
Hey, it's me. I got her password.
What is it?
Life sucks, one word.
Perfect.
Ah, so she just broke her daughter's internet password.
See?
I think this is one of the more successful stories, this one with the kids, because the payoff at the end of the episode is so horrific, I think. Yeah, that's the raunchless version. Are we sure?
Yeah, but I never took her picture.
What was she like?
She was cool.
Can I see one of your photographs?
My photographs?
Yeah.
When was the last time you ever sat down in an airplane next to someone remotely attractive?
I love this one right here.
Even better, one who thought that you were attractive. Or was at least pretending to.
It's very beautiful. Munich.
Yeah.
Finish the speech?
Oh, taking a break. The guys got tired of me yelling at them.
Big old grumpy. I was so excited to work with Penny, too, because she was in the Larry Sanders Show. Like my favorite show ever, just about.
Oh, how you doing?
It was great in the series, you know, to have the first wife be an African-American who was evil. So it wasn't like, you know, you had this African-American great president with a great wife, and they're really great, everyone's trying to kill them.
Yeah, and everything's wholesome.
Yeah. And she was very badly behaved.
She says it's urgent.
You sense that he's not the sweetest guy in the world, too, which is nice.
This better be good.
Can I get you some coffee or anything?
Thank you, Pat.
My response? Here's my response. You air that allegation or anything remotely like it.
Well, this is his sudden story coming in.
This conversation's over, Marie.
This was the hotel room, wasn't it? Was it a set? Yeah.
No, this is a hotel room, an actual hotel room.
That's right.
Really low ceilings, really cramped. Really difficult to light.
We tried to make every set have a different colour, just so when you cut there, you knew, you have to be instantaneously transported somewhere else. So this is all a bit golden, CTU is a bit blue, and the kids' stuff's a bit monochromatic, I think.
I would have loved to be able to keep that shot going and go around him and see back into the hotel.
What, without that camera shadow on his shoulder?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have had time in the end. We could have done the craziest shot in the world and been cut out.
This is Richard Walsh. At the tone, leave a message.
Richard, it's Jack. Call me back. It's important.
I thought you wanted to get your life back together. Make things right with your family. You think this is helping?
He's got information that I need.
What information? Never mind. You can't tell me. Fine. But Jack, if Tony doesn't find anything, you could end up in jail.
Probably.
I like how we're holding this shot for so long.
It's weird, isn't it?
All the information you need is in there.
Yeah. That's the thing about TV too. You can't go to that many different locations, so you have to make the best you can out of everywhere and find new ways of looking at every sequence, every set.
You can look the other way once, and it's no big deal.
Which in the end is actually very challenging, and it's sort of very satisfying to pull it off.
Pretty soon, that's all you're doing is compromising.
I mean, maybe no one knows you made something out of nothing, but well, at least you do.
I'm not normally a big fan of someone looking the same person with someone over the shoulder. It's like, I don't think it happens very often in life. I don't really talk to people with my back to them a lot. But
always, the same,
always looks good if you can pull it off like it's actually looking somewhere.
At the same time, I think when people talk, they very seldom talk, eye to eye.
Right.
We glance around a lot, if nothing else.
Tony's coming along.
But I always try and make a point of putting a sparkle in the eye, no matter what else the rest of the lighting is doing. If you can't see the eyes, if you can't see a glint there, the shot becomes quite dead.
Yeah, audiences, well, just generally, your eyes always go to someone else's eyes first.
Yeah, straight away. I think you can silhouette somebody. As long as there's a twinkle in the eye, then they're still present.
Right.
I broke into Kim's email. Janet sent her one this morning. They're meeting two guys somewhere in the valley.
Did you get an address?
Yep, I'm going right now.
Would you mind if I came along? I'm getting a little stir-crazy just sitting around here.
All right.
That's in the same house, isn't it? That's right. We use the same house location for the two different...
About three different things.
Yeah.
Wasn't the teenage boy's room in that house as well?
Oh, I think it was, you're right.
Anybody got a phone? I'll call.
Yeah, I do. I gotta go home.
Why?
My mother left 5 messages.
Run home to mommy. Hey, her father just died, okay? Maybe her mother needs her.
Oh, that's right. She lied about her dad being dead. Just great teenage stuff, I think.
I don't want to go home. But...
We'll drop you off, okay?
Oh, it's funny. I always feel this is the most compelling story just because it's not international spydom. This is the one that really drove the pilot, I think, in a way. This is a teeny set too, isn't it? On the
yes, we. This one just had to be a set.
Yeah, that's right. Where was it? I think it was the same day as we shot the whole aeroplane thing on that tiny stage.
But we had to have shooting ports cut out
because
you can't feel that the lens is outside the room. Every angle has to be from within the room.
Right. That scene was shortened a wee bit too, I think.
You don't say.
See ya.
See ya.
Yeah?
I got into the D'Arcy account. Nina said you wanted it?
Thank you. Send it to my screen.
All right.
All the way through the first episode, made sure that you're over, always over people's shoulders, because then you don't have to worry about which way the actors are looking, crossing the line, all that kind of stuff. You can just always be involved with the character you want to be involved with, and you always know where everyone is, which I think is important geographically, just so it doesn't feel fake. A lot of spy stuff, you feel like they're in different buildings when they're chatting in the same room, because you know, every shot's so designed.
Last August, when you led the takedown of Philippe Darcet, all his assets were transferred to a custodial account in Langley, Virginia. $200,000 fell out along the way.
Funny, I thought we were crossing the line a lot more, but maybe that's have started more later.
I don't think there was room in the pilot because it was all locations. We couldn't cross the line. The rooms were all so tiny.
Nowhere physically to be.
Yeah. Then you won't mind. But actually, I think the lines are crossed. It's just, you know, they're not using two angles all the time.
The source, George.
I always felt that sort of 24 was like a development of the stuff we started doing on Under Suspicion.
Right.
Especially when we took Gene Hackman down to, the red light district in Old San Juan in La Perla.
Yeah, all that real rough handheld stuff.
Rough handheld stuff, and just being instinctive and just going for the shot that felt right rather than the one that technically was the correct one to do.
I think you can cut almost anything together if the shot has the right information in. I don't think there's any rules about close-ups and wide shots and mid-shots.
Thanks for your help, George.
You'll live to regret this, Bauer. I promise you that.
Well, he's not wrong. I work a lot with a guy called David Hart, who's an FBI consultant, and I asked him the truth about how someone would pull this plane hijacking off, and he gave us all this stuff. He said this is how he would do it. And in fact, the way that this character Mandy blows up the plane is something that they intercepted happening. They found a bomb in the fire extinguisher in real life, and they also stopped up a bag which had cordite as a part of the make of the bag. So a lot of these ideas that how she pulled this off are stuff that had either been planned or tried. It just seems even more crazy. And then Mia's doing a good job pretending to be really drunk.
What have we got? The plastic explosive.
Yeah, built into the seams of the bag. And always trying to keep some tension going so she's about to be caught, so it's not just her. But I think we shot all her stuff really with two cameras and one or two takes. I mean, she just had to practice and rehearse everything.
That's right. We're just out of time.
And you had to try and work out something that could happen remotely in real time.
And of course, all bombs and movies have timers.
Yeah, with flashing red lights.
Yeah, flashing red lights.
And preferably leave them on the outside so everyone can see them.
Everyone can see that it's a bomb.
Yeah. And try and pick the coolest black gear to jump out of a plane with if at all possible. And we shot this stunt for real, didn't we?
That's right. I think we did it twice, didn't we? Because there wasn't enough paper and stuff flying around the first time.
Right. And then we had to cut out the shot of the plane blowing up, which was good. Just used a stock footage shot of a parachutist.
Turn left at the light.
What?
I'm in a car with Alan York. He's the father of one of Kimberly's friends.
See, that's a great split screen, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fun. You know where they all are, and it was all different.
We think that they might be out together.
Where?
I don't know yet. They're meeting some guys in the valley.
Wait a second. So you're going to the valley with this guy, Alan York? What are you going to do?
See, I like how the light on his hand is searing hot, and yet his face is a lot darker.
It's like impossible to in-car stuff, isn't it? Where that light comes from.
Yes, I can't know that.
Hey.
Hey.
favor, could you cover for me?
Sure.
Okay, forward all my calls to my cell phone. I'll be back as soon as I can.
Jack.
What?
A 747 just blew up over the Mojave Desert.
Preliminary reports make it sound like it was a bomb.
Passenger list. This was very controversial at the time, wasn't it? Strange coincidence.
Yeah. I guess it's part of the success of 24 because it turned out that it's feasible, more than feasible.
We just landed on that time, didn't it? That's right. Remember, we were in the valley. We shot, found this one street which was really well lit. We used it for everything. Didn't we?
That's right.
Drives
that's right.
Back up in front.
And for some reason, every time you film at night, the roads are wet. Even in the valley.
Even in LA, where it never rains. We knew and we wanted to, make LA look like the way we sort of saw it for this, which was a tough sort of almost mining town or something, just all the mountains around, just warehouses and ugly lights and there's the van driving past Leslie and Alan.
You never got that shot to quite work as smoothly as it should have, but it makes the point really well, especially with this box closing in on it.
It's thrown away nicely, which is good. There's that crane shot again.
As I remember, that parachute shot was a day shot, wasn't it? It was a stock shot in the daytime, and we had to time it and do stuff to make it look like night.
I think it was late afternoon, but we cheated a lot, yeah.
And there's all the clever people who helped make it. You know, it was actually one of the most stimulating projects I've ever been on. Doing 24 really sort of invigorated my kind of love of photography and using it to tell stories. It was really, really refreshing.
Yeah, I found working in television after that so much cooler because people just do stuff and you wouldn't have to be so precise all the time and you could get away with a lot of different stuff you can't get in movies nowadays.
Yeah, and you can give credit to the audience for being, a lot smarter. You don't have to spell it out.
Right.
I think the more you suggest stuff to them, let them work it out, the more satisfying the experience of watching is.